The Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good Friday afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. The Memorial Day weekend is here, but this year, the unofficial start of summer comes in the midst of a pandemic. Health experts urging against any large outdoor gatherings.
It's so important that we don't congregate in groups of hundreds of people.
From sea to shining sea, folks are eager to stretch their legs and let loose after a couple months of being cooped up with coronavirus. But is it safe?
Things have been a little bit chaotic, but, you know, everyone working together in hopes that we can all create a new kind of summer.
With all 50 states now in some stage of reopening, officials urging extra vigilance on beaches, at barbecues, and in those national parks.
It's very hard to physical distance. And if you can't, that's where wearing the mask will play a big part.
Ken Snyder with Kaleida Health says the mask is the key to getting back to normal. 20 states, including New York and Pennsylvania, easing lockdown orders this weekend, and this includes things like opening up state parks and public beaches in limited capacity. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
50% capacity and then social distancing on the beach. Masks are required to be worn when social distancing is impossible.
The governor says if you want to hit the beach, you better get there early or you'll miss the boat.
Those beaches may reach capacity at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning.
With uncertainty surrounding coronavirus, holiday travel expected to reach record lows this weekend. This despite gas prices being below $2 a gallon across much of the country. The CDC releasing new guidelines for churches today. President Trump wants them back in business.
We're going to open our churches again. I think CDC is going to put something out very soon. We've got to open our churches. People want to go in.
In California, over 1,000 churches plan to defy their governor and open up by the end of the month.
More people have died from suicide in California than have actually died from the coronavirus, so there is a danger to waiting this long to open up.
Brian Kilmeade of Fox News. U.S. flags being lowered to honor coronavirus victims. President Trump says he's ordered flags flown at half staff on all federal buildings and at national monuments for the next 3 days. It was an act of terrorism. The FBI investigating the motive for yesterday's shooting at a naval air station in Corpus Christi, Texas. Todd Pyro of Fox News.
The AP identifying the gunman as Adam Al-Sali from Corpus Christi. The FBI saying he tried to speed his car through a gate at the base, opening fire and hitting a sailor who was able to roll over and hit a switch that raised a barrier in time to stop his car from getting onto the base. The shooter got out of the car, but was killed by security.
The sailor who subdued the shooter was wearing a protective vest and is out of the hospital. The 20-year-old gunman was a U.S. citizen born in Syria, and the FBI said to be searching for a possible second suspect. The man who filmed the killing of a black jogger on his cell phone in Georgia, that man has been charged with murder now. William Bryan's cell phone footage is what ultimately led to the arrest of a father and son who chased down the 25-year-old jogger and then killed him, allegedly. Officials in central Michigan say it will take days to size up the full extent of the damage from historic flooding there. Sarah Schaefer lives in Kalamazoo.
There's standing water in the basement. I've got two pumps running right now.
Homes are under several feet of water after those dams ruptured following days of rain. Those two dams in question had been cited before as being unsafe. Well, happy birthday to this gobble gobble. 40 years ago today, that bright yellow dot chomping guy called Pac-Man was born, and it's become the most successful arcade game of all time. Still to come on the Noon Report, Tioga County wants to go green, new school rules for COVID-19, and nursing home deaths in New York. The controversy continues.
Good afternoon. The Memorial Day weekend is upon us, and the weather, well, it starts a little mixed, you might say, with some showers, but there'll be some sunshine as well. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, thank you. More questions than answers today when it comes to nursing home deaths in New York State.
4,300 recovering coronavirus patients were sent to New York's already vulnerable nursing homes under a controversial state directive that was ultimately scrapped amid criticism that it was accelerating outbreaks. That's according to an Associated Press tally conducted after the state declined to release its own survey. The March 25th directive requiring nursing homes to take in recovering COVID-19 patients from hospitals has become a thorny political issue for Governor Cuomo, who abruptly reversed the policy on May 10th. New York leads the nation in nursing home deaths with about 5,700. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Green means go, and Tioga County, Pennsylvania says they're ready to go. Ready to enter the green phase of Governor Wolf's color-coded comeback plan, County Commissioner Eric Coolidge.
We do not have the authority to give permission for anyone to open up, but we understand they need to.
Local leaders want the governor to turn the light switch on in the northern tier. Republican Representative Clint Owlett.
We have over 2 million people on unemployment. That's unacceptable. These people are hurting. These people are hungry. These people need hope. And it's time that Harrisburg start to recognize that things might be a little bit different in Tioga and Potter, Bradford, Sullivan, McKean counties.
Tioga County has zero active coronavirus cases. Jim Nobles is chairman of the county task force.
What we've asked every business to do is submit to us in writing what their plan would be if they were allowed to move to the green phase. I certainly believe that the owner of a restaurant knows better how to keep this virus at bay.
49 of Pennsylvania's 67 counties have gone from red to yellow. Tioga County hoping to move from yellow to green as soon as next week. Public school this fall still in limbo in New York.
Yeah, Governor Cuomo says he's still not sure whether or not to open up school in September.
It's still too early to make that determination. We want to get more information on this inflammatory syndrome. We also want to see how the development for treatment of vaccine proceeds.
The governor says state guidelines will be issued in early June on what schools need to do to reopen. He also says summer school will be done online, and state beaches will reopen today.
There are certain rules on beaches that are operating, primarily 50% capacity, and then social distancing on the beach.
The governor says he expects state beaches to fill up fast this holiday weekend with a huge pent-up demand for folks to be out. Bill Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bill. A Southern Tier school administrator not very happy with the governor's decision to scrap in-person summer school.
We're holding on to hope with our special needs summer school that we'd be able to do something live to really help meet the needs of those kids.
That's Corning, New York school superintendent Mike Janowski. He says the economy will not roar back until schools are open.
There's no doubt for the state to fully reopen and parents to be able to make money, schools have to be open in some fashion.
Schools in New York will be required to submit their reopening plans to the state by July. New CDC guidelines for public schools raising a few eyebrows. The CDC wants desks spaced 6 feet apart and students to eat their lunches at their desks. Rachel's a sophomore in Rochester.
I'll be excited if we can go back to school in the fall, but I would definitely be a lot less excited if we have to follow all those guidelines.
Teachers will be required to wear face masks. Field trips and extracurricular activities would be eliminated if the guidelines are adopted. Sonia is a student in Cheektowaga.
I feel like extracurricular activities are like what make people want to go to school.
The guidelines also recommend keeping groups of students with the same teacher as much as possible. Math teacher Kim McLean in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
It would be really hard to find, let's say, 20 students all needing the same schedule and having the same teachers. So I think that would be an absolute nightmare.
Everybody who enters a school building would have to get their temperature checked on a daily basis if the guidelines are adopted. A York County, Pennsylvania diner is defying the governor and is open for business. Christos Sakarellis owns the Round the Clock Diner in the city of York.
We flatten the curve. You know, now it's time to stand up, flatten the fear.
I mean, we've done everything. We're doing everything correctly.
Zacharias says he has the support of local and county officials in his act of civil disobedience against the governor of Pennsylvania. New unemployment numbers don't look good in Pennsylvania. The jobless rate for the month of April, 15.1%. That's more than double the March figure. Pennsylvania's unemployment rate is about 0.5% higher than the national average. Buffalo, New York Assemblyman Sean Ryan says full-blown marijuana legalization is not a plausible solution for shoring up the state's ballooning budget deficit.
If you think that's going to solve our budget deficit, then you're smoking too much marijuana.
Democrats in Albany floating a plan to permit recreational marijuana use in order to raise much-needed revenue.
Marijuana sales are projected to bring money in over a five-year period at a very slow ramp-up. But what New York State and several other states in the union had faced is something more akin to a natural disaster. It didn't just hit one community. It hit each and every community in New York State.
Governor Cuomo says without a $61 billion bailout from the federal government, the state will have to slash thousands of jobs in health care and public education. Sports next. It's the two-minute drill, a Friday edition. Here's Sonny Delfiette.
Well, thank you, Bob. The NFL owners will vote on rule change proposals next week, including the use of a sky judge and an alternative to the onside kick. Teams received a list of potential rule changes yesterday with a virtual vote set for next Thursday. The onside kick alternative would be a 4th and 15 from the team's own 25. A sports media expert says the spectacle surrounding ESPN's The Last Dance fed the hunger for fresh sports content during this pandemic.
The fact that ESPN really embraced this documentary in creating such an event around it, one that we are all hungry for, because we are missing sports right now, help those ratings go up.
Olivia Stomsky of Syracuse University's Newhouse Sports Media Center says the high ratings for The Last Dance reflects sports fans' everlasting interest in Michael Jordan and the Bulls.
The interest in the life of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, especially during, you know, this time of NBA with the loss of Kobe Bryant, the ratings would have been good and high no matter what.
The 10-part series averaged about 5.6 million viewers throughout and finished as ESPN's most watched documentary ever. Now get ready for this. ESPN announcing it will produce a series on Tom Brady's 9 Super Bowls with the Patriots to be shown in 2021, entitled The Man in the Arena. The series will feature an episode each on Brady's 6 Super Bowl victories, as well as his 3 losses in the Super Bowl. New Jets running back Frank Gore believed they have a great shot at winning the division. He called the AFC East wide open now that Tom Brady has left the Patriots. The 37-year-old is now on his 3rd AFC team in the last 3 seasons, having previously played with the Dolphins, Bills, and now the Jets. And NASCAR back in action on Sunday, the Coca-Cola 600 from Charlotte. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delfia.
Thank you very much, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, Kev says it's a mixed bag weather-wise this holiday weekend. The Capital Connection crew talking religious freedom in the age of coronavirus, and we're celebrating 100 years of radio. After this.
If you thought it was tough to navigate the challenges of moving church online all across America, well, wait till we try to open them back up again. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Restaurants, theaters, sports teams, theme parks, all are scrambling to figure out if and when and how they can get people back to business. At the same time, and far more important for many of us, churches are trying to figure out how to reopen as well. Not only are such plans complicated by all the official regulations and recommendations that differ, not only from state to state, but even county to county, but different theologies and different worship styles matter as well. More sacramental churches that emphasize participatory worship and weekly communion face certain challenges. Massive congregations with huge crowds face others. Some congregations consist of a high number of at-risk members due to their age or other factors. Some do not. And after navigating all of these challenges, it's still not clear just how many people are willing to show up again. All of this means, according to Baylor historian Philip Jenkins, that people in the future will think about church in terms of BC, before coronavirus, and after. The key factor in Jenkins' fascinating analysis, which we'll link to at breakpoint.org, is what we might call pre-existing conditions to coronavirus. In other words, in many ways, the coronavirus hasn't so much created problems for the church as it has revealed and accelerated them. One particular pre-existing condition that Jenkins believes will be accelerated by this crisis is secularization, especially here in the U.S. Now, to be clear, secularization is not the same thing as atheism or even a decline or destruction of faith. Rather, as Jenkins describes, secularization is a decline of religious institutions and a decisive shift in religious practice to individual and privatized forms. In other words, secularization takes personal faith and makes it private, often by making us more and more religiously unaffiliated. So Jenkins thinks it's quite possible that the U.S. in the 2020s will witness a rapid secular trend that's comparable to Western Europe in the 1960s, in which church attendance declines and religious conviction is seen as less and less appropriate for public life. Historically, writes Jenkins, pandemics and diseases have often played a major role in shaping religion and in undermining older religious establishments. And we live in a time where institutions have already been weakened in many ways. And even if the coronavirus sparks a revival in personal piety or privatized faith, as many have suggested, Jenkins counters that religious institutions will likely be weakened, not strengthened. Now, part of the challenge is, of course, financial. That alone, Jenkins predicts, will lead to a new age of church closure and mergers. And churches that are able to weather the economic part of the storm face the very real possibility that people will just prefer watching services online instead of being physically present from here on out. Now, Jenkins' predictions, as he admits, are controversial. Historian Kyle Harper reminded Rod Dreher that the 3rd century plague of Cyprian weakened Roman institutions and helped pave the way for the triumph of Christianity. And another plague in the 6th century indirectly led to the Christianization of Britain. And more importantly, there are other pre-existing conditions that predate late modern Western culture. And yet the most important pre-existing condition is always the resurrected Christ, who promised that the gates of hell could not prevail against his church. From that solid foundation, and only from that solid foundation, are we able to think about this cultural moment and what the future will hold for the church and our culture. The one thing we can know is we can't assume that life after coronavirus will be the same as life before it, especially for the church. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Memorial Day weekend is here. What do we got going on outside? Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast. Here's the call for this afternoon. Sunshine in central New York will prevail, clouding up late there. Elsewhere, any sun in New York gives way to cloud cover and a couple of showers. It's cloudy in Pennsylvania with showers and even a rumble of thunder. High temps, 60s and low 70s. Tonight, cloudy with some showers and rumbles. Low temps, 50s and low 60s. Tomorrow, morning clouds and showers give way to some sunshine. High temps, low 70s. The exception, though, eastern Pennsylvania. It stays cloudy and wet there. Sunday and Monday, sun and clouds, a couple of scattered thunder showers and warm, 70s and lower 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Well, all this week we've been celebrating 100 years of radio. Today, correspondent Sam Litzinger takes a look at the evolution of news on the radio.
This is London.
If there's one person who can be credited with creating radio news, the leading candidate is Edward R. Murrow. He and his team of CBS reporters, who came to be known as the Murrow Boys, even though one was a woman, were the inventors of broadcast journalism, reporting World War II for an American audience desperate to hear it.
This is Richard C. Hottolett speaking from London. The Allied forces landed in France early this morning.
Richard C. Hottolett and the other Murrow Boys talked about what they saw and heard.
Whatever you saw was a fact.
The technology of the day was relatively primitive, so just getting a report on the air was a minor miracle.
This is London calling Columbia, New York.
The radio networks began to make news a centerpiece of their programming. And as happened with soap operas and game shows and dramas, television used radio news as a template for its own newscast. Even Murrow made the transition, but it all began on the radio.
Good night and good luck.
I'm Sam Litzinger.
All right, awesome stuff. Thank you, Sam. This is the Noon Report. It is Friday, May 22nd. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Jason, we'll begin with you this week. Church rules in New York. The governor offering some guidelines in this coronavirus era. No more than 10 allowed at a single time in the church building. Where I come from, we don't say that's church. We call that small group. But nonetheless, here we are. Your thoughts on these new regulations for churches in New York?
Well, you know, 10 is a pretty low number. You know, I know homeschooling families, frankly, that's going to be their family alone that'll be attending church. So, you know, we've got some real concerns over what that's going to mean for churches going forward. There's at the crux of this a situation that has to be addressed, though, is who has the authority to call that congregation to assemble and to worship God. And that's the issue here. Is this the authority of the church to meet, or is it the authority of the governor to control this? If this were about a pandemic, I understand the public safety issues, but I'm growing increasingly concerned because I'm watching a daily press conference that has at least 20 people in the room exercising the right to free press. But those of us that look to exercise our religious rights of freedom and religious liberty are only permitted 10. So there does seem to be some hypocrisy here that while it's encouraging the governor is moving and responding to the faith community's concerns, he's just not going far enough, fast enough. So there is a grave concern. I know that an increasing number of churches have just said May 31st is the day that they're going to reopen their doors.
Interesting. I know Governor Wolf, Michael, in Pennsylvania has been taking it on the chin from a number of fronts, whether it be the businesses opening up or the state of nursing homes. But let's talk about the churches in Pennsylvania. What's going on there as we kind of come back from coronavirus?
Well, the state has been offering somewhat similar guidance to what has been happening in New York, but simply claiming it to be guidance. They have said that they really have no authority ultimately to tell churches what they can or can't do, that they are not going to be sending in law enforcement or those sorts of things is basically what the statements that they're making. So they have these guidelines. We at the Pennsylvania Family Institute and our Church Ambassador Network with Kurt Weaver have put together some guidance, some material on our website that talks about basically what the government guidelines are, but also that churches do have the liberty under the First Amendment to do what is wise and proper and what the Holy Spirit would lead them to do.
Yeah. Jason, there was an interesting op-ed piece in the New York Post today. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. The author basically daring stores and businesses to open their doors despite what the lockdown order of the day is. And it got me thinking, as a person of faith, what is your counsel to listeners right now, many of them small business owners who are just struggling to survive? Do they, for freedom's sake, defy these orders, or is this a render unto Caesar what is Caesar's moment? That's a delicate balancing act that a lot of people are undertaking these days.
Yeah, it's incredibly delicate. And frankly, the church issue is an easier one for me. I think it's a clearer constitutional issue. It's much more difficult with the businesses that are out there. And it is difficult because we are watching a governor that has essentially, you know, ground the economy to a halt in family businesses that are, many of them will never reopen after this pandemic. That's going to be extremely problematic. But if they open those doors, they have to be advised that they're going to be stiff and hefty fines, that when they stick their neck out there, they may be the one that is made an example of. And so there has to be some real caution there as businesses think about bucking against the government's orders regarding this issue.
Yeah, Michael, so many small businesses in Pennsylvania will sadly never open their doors again. One of the many tragedies to this crisis, the governor just this week vetoing several pieces of legislation that would have given counties more control over how they do this. Representative Metcalf said that the governor's response to the virus has done more harm than the virus itself. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think he's exactly right. There's so many different indicators that you can look at to point at. number one, just the impact on the economy, talking about the business closings, et cetera. 27% of the workforce in Pennsylvania is now filed for jobless claims in our state. But then you look at the opioid addictions and the overdose deaths that are spiking and now skyrocketing, heading towards record numbers after several years of decline. That's another example of it. And then trust in government. People are increasingly not believing that the government has their best interest at heart and our governor has their best interest in heart. And that is really corrosive to trust in government and to our American way of life.
Let's talk about the nursing home crisis, another sidebar to this story. In New York State, Governor Cuomo at a press conference this week seemed to blame President Trump for the nursing home deaths in New York, saying he was just following the CDC guidelines that he was given. So, Jason, does the governor have a point here?
No. In fact, you can see the governor is getting more visibly agitated as that issue is raised. And, you know, the press has been pressing into that issue and helping the state to realize how serious this is. But that was a decision that was made by the Cuomo administration to allow those COVID-19 people into those nursing homes to go back into there. They could not turn people away that were COVID-19 under state law. And now 45 days later, that policy has been reversed. The governor refuses to apologize for that. He does not say it was wrong. It was simply a policy reversal. But you don't fix what ain't broke.
Yeah. Mike Terzai is the latest to come out and say something stinks in the state of Denmark here. That state, in this case, is Harrisburg. When it comes to the nursing home crisis there, you've got the health secretary moving her mom back in March. And Terzai says, we tried to get answers from Harrisburg for weeks leading up to this. Didn't get any. More than half of all the COVID-19 fatalities in that state are in nursing homes. Is it time for Secretary Levine to step down?
I think it is, especially with the track record that they have. I mean, there are some counties in Pennsylvania where 100% of the deaths from COVID are in nursing homes. I would encourage people to Google Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, and see the response that they had with nursing homes. So much better, so much more responsive and saving lives there compared to New York and Pennsylvania. It's atrocious. It's really criminal when you think about the fact of these decisions resulting in so many deaths. We knew from the start, based on what happened in Washington State, that the elderly and in nursing homes were at risk, and this response has been atrocious. And I agree with the calls for the resignation of the secretary.
All right. I would be remiss if I did not ask the pastor here, the Reverend Jason McGuire, his thoughts on the passing of the late, great Ravi Zacharias. I love the line that he taught thinkers how to believe and believers how to think. A giant of the faith. Just share, if you would, a few moments, some reflections that you have on what this man meant to the Christian faith.
Well, you know, I'm reminded of the account where the woman came to him and said, Mr. Zacharias, whenever you speak, my brain hurts. And he reminded her, well, muscles that are never used get sore.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that he was one that forced Christians to think about why they believe what they believe. For many years, our organization tried to schedule him as a speaker for our March annual event, but he always took that month off as a sabbatical. And so I think that the other thing to learn from his life is not just the intellectual, the apologetic faith that was there, but the balance as well, to realize that there is a time for us to pull aside, to draw aside, to renew for our ministry work. And there's a lesson for every pastor in that as well.
There sure is. We're going to miss him so much. And then, Michael, you had an event back on Monday, this online March for Life. Tell us how that went.
I thought it went great. We were supposed to have a March for Life in person, the first ever Pennsylvania March for Life on May 18th. At the Capitol, but obviously with COVID, we're not able to pull that off. So we teamed with the March for Life organization in Washington, D.C. for this virtual log-in for life event with Abby Johnson, who's known for the Unplanned movie and the book by the same name. She was a Planned Parenthood clinic director who saw the light and now is helping people get out of that industry, and some other great speakers as well to encourage pro-life activism in our state. 2020 and the elections coming up are of vital significance and importance on the sanctity of life, and it's our intent with that webinar and going forward to spur pro-life activity in Pennsylvania.
All right. With that said, you do have information on your website about those voter guides. We'll talk more about this next week, but where can folks get that voter guide in Pennsylvania, Michael?
If they find our website at tafamily.org, there'll be a link to it there.
All right. For more information on the good work going on at New Yorkers, Jason, where can folks find you?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
They make it look easy. The Capital Connection crew. The program comes your way every Friday during the Noon Report, or you can download a free podcast online. Just go to fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The Memorial Day weekend is here. It begins a little wet in much of the area. Some showers and rumbles ahead for tonight. But the rest of the weekend looks salvageable. There'll be some sunshine. Also a couple of showers and thunder showers around. So stay skywise and apply that sunscreen, because there will be some sunshine out and about this weekend as well. Here's the call for this afternoon. Sunshine in central New York will prevail, clouding up late there. Elsewhere, any sun in New York gives way to cloud cover and a couple of showers. It's cloudy in Pennsylvania with showers and even a rumble of thunder. High temps, 60s and low 70s. Tonight, cloudy with some showers and rumbles. Low temps, 50s and low 60s. Tomorrow, morning clouds and showers give way to some sunshine. High temps, low 70s. The exception, though, eastern Pennsylvania. It stays cloudy and wet there. Sunday and Monday, sun and clouds, a couple of scattered thunder showers and warm, 70s and lower 80s.
All right, we'll take it. Thank you, Kevin. And finally, at noon today, as many of us venture out in search of entertainment this weekend, there's a whole new generation of Americans discovering what life was like before Netflix and video games. Here's correspondent Maria Villarreal.
Once a relic of the past, the nation's nearly 330 drive-in movie theaters are making a comeback with pandemic precautions pushing their popularity.
We've been sold out every night since we opened.
Glenn Solomon owns a Coyote Drive-In.
People are excited to take their children, get in the car, come out and have a night out together.
The Medellin Moreno family is anxious to watch their first drive-in movie.
We're feeling really, really good.
There you guys go.
General Manager Chris Fortune says even as business booms, customer and employee safety is their priority.
We are doing social distancing everywhere at the drive-in we can possibly.
A silver lining found on the silver screen.
Whatever you're doing this weekend, drive-ins, barbecues, or the beach, we hope you have a wonderful time. Stay safe, too. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.